Ramsey TV.
From the edge of the bottom of the Floridian Peninsula, this is your friend and mine, Martin Zender, back again. And as you know, as you should know, I'm in a study on 1 Corinthians chapter 15, speaking of the death of Christ. Now, I want to talk about the death of Christ. I just want to touch on it for now. I'll get into more detail in the next couple days, but I want to talk about the faith of Jesus Christ. But this has to do also with his death, so hang in there with me. I'm going to read where I'm going to start where I left off in 1 Corinthians 15, but I'm not going to go into it in detail yet. I'm going to use this as a springboard to talk about the faith of Jesus Christ. And his faith, I've been bragging about it. If we're going to brag about anything, we're going to brag about his faith, not ours. And I'm going to explain to you how great it was, because even I've been doing this show for you for 7 or 8 years, and I have not yet completely understood the depth of the faith of Christ in going into the death state for not only us, but for the rest of the world. But this is an important topic. This is an important show, and I think you're going to be impressed, because I am seeing something that I've never brought to you yet. I'm going to bring it to you right now. I left off in verse 23 of 1 Corinthians 15. No, what is it? I can't see. What is it? It's not verse 23. That is verse 11. If Christ is being heralded that he has been roused from among the dead, how are some among you saying that there is no resurrection of the dead? I told you the Corinthians were a little lame. They weren't too smart. Some of them were teaching that there was no resurrection from the dead at all, for anybody. Not for them, not for anybody. And Paul is going to remind them here that if they're going to teach no one's been resurrected from the dead, then not even has Christ been resurrected from the dead. This is going to get good, but I got to light this first. Hang on. Perhaps. It's a little windy out here. I don't know. Here we go. But the death of Christ does not happen without the faith of Christ. Christ goes to the grave being promised by his God and Father that he will be raised from the dead. And so Paul is absolutely incensed here in 1 Corinthians 15 that some could be saying that there's no such thing as the resurrection of the dead, because that would deny the resurrection of Christ, which is the most important resurrection. So Paul's going to tell them that if there's no resurrection, then not even Christ has been raised from the dead. And as I've been telling you, the only reason we're here, the only reason we are talking about salvation and about going to heaven, going to the celestial realms, being justified, being conciliated, all these blessings we have are all based, I know I've told you this before, but they're all based on the death and the resurrection of Christ. And as I've also said, we're saved by his faith, not ours. His faith is the engine on the train. Our faith is the caboose. You may have never heard me say this before. It's a simple example, but on a train, the engine is the only part of the train that has an engine. That's why they call it an engine. Every car on the train has no source of power of its own. Only one part of the train is the power, and that's the engine. Every other train, it doesn't matter if there's 100 cars behind it, 200, 300, none of them have their own source of power. They're hooked up to the main power, which is the engine. This is Jesus Christ's faith. And so this is a thought that I had that I'm going to share with you. Some people will think, well, death is no big deal because we die. Human beings die. You know people who have died. I know people who have died. Both my parents are dead. And so death seems like a common thing to us. Some people are calloused concerning death, and this is why. It's because we, as mortal human beings, that is, as soon as we're born, we're dying, right? As soon as we come out of the womb, we start to slowly die, like a piece of fruit plucked from a tree. And so we live our lives we live our lives knowing that we're going to die, and we've already been tainted by death. And so we go through life already dying, already discouraged. We all have hard lives. We're calloused. We're sick with sin. And we all have, well, I'll speak for myself. We're tainted by life, and we sometimes have poor attitudes about things. Now, I'm contrasting this with Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ was not tainted by death. He was pure, and he came from his Father absolutely untainted by sin and death. And so try to imagine how difficult coming here would have been for him, and how difficult it would be for him to even contemplate the specter of his own death. We're calloused. We see death all the time. We're acquainted with it. Like I say, we're currently dying. We're mortal. And so death is a natural progression for what we already are. But when he came to earth, he was not touched by any of it. This is why he was hurt more than any of us. I mean, we feel pain from being abandoned by friends, from being abandoned by relatives, but he was also abandoned. But it hurt him way worse than it hurts us, because he was untainted by any of this. And so I don't know if I can do anything to convince you of the horror of death for him. The horror of death for him, the specter of death, that is the death hanging over his head his whole life, was 1,000 times worse than it is for any of us. And the reason is, again, is that we're already dying. We have a head start on the day we're born. We're dying, 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 dying every day, so we're acquainted with it. So when the damn thing finally happens, it's almost like, what do we say? Death is just a part of life, right? That's what we say. That's how we deal with it. Well, it's just a part of life. Everybody dies. And every season, if you live in the north, you see every winter, everything dies. In the spring, everything comes back to life. And so, like I said, we're acquainted with it. But he was not acquainted with it. He had nothing but life surging in him. He was beyond death. He was not touched by it while he was on earth. And so for him, as he goes through his life and he gets close to that time of his crucifixion, it becomes a nightmare for him. It becomes a horror like we cannot even imagine. Again, because we're hardened, we're calloused, we're like, yeah, we're all gonna die. And we think of innocent animals dying. Don't you hate it when an animal dies? Because animals are like, they don't know. They don't know what it is. They can't contemplate death. They never think about their own mortality. So I think it always hurts us worse when we see an innocent animal die, because we just feel worse for them. It's easier for some people to watch a human die than it is to watch an animal die, because the human deserves it. He was calloused, or she's calloused, or they were bad people. So I guess the example would be the sheep. Isn't that the type of Christ? The innocent lamb was sacrificed in Israel. I would hate to see that myself. I don't like it. I don't like the idea that animals are sacrificed, because there's an innocent sheep. It doesn't know what's happening. It's carried to the altar and its throat is slit. And you see its eyes. Its eyes don't know what you're doing. Why are you doing this to me? What's happening? You loved me your whole life. You took care of me. Now you're taking me to the altar. And it doesn't know. Multiply that by 1,000 with Jesus Christ. The lamb is the type. The lamb is the type. He was so untainted by death that for him going to the cross, as much as we think about, like, have you often thought about this? I mean, I haven't maybe often thought about it, but as a kid I did. I saw Jesus on the crucifix at my Catholic church, and I said, what must it have been like? And I'm sure you, if you've watched The Passion or if you've watched Mel Gibson's movie, you think, oh my God, how would I handle being crucified? What would I do? Is this like, seems the most horrible thing you can imagine. But yet it would be easier for you to undergo a torture like that than it was for him. So you might be tempted to think, well, other people were crucified. There were thousands of people back in that day. The Romans were cruel, and one of their means of capital punishment was crucifixion. So you think, well, okay, Jesus Christ was crucified also. No, you're not getting it whatsoever. If you think that, oh yeah, he was crucified like everybody else, again, it's not the same. You can't see it as the same thing, because those people that were crucified, at the worst, they were hardened criminals. So even that thief at the cross, that thief that was crucified next to him said, we're getting what we deserved. But this man did nothing. He doesn't deserve to be crucified. We do. And if you get right down to it, all humanity deserved that. So you can't look at other people who are crucified and say, well, Jesus was crucified, as if it's no big deal. Because I don't mean to overemphasize, I mean, I don't mean to be repetitive here, but his crucifixion was 1,000 times the pain, 1,000 times the shame, 1,000 times the humiliation, because, again, of his innocence. And the lambs of the Old Testament were a type of the innocence of Christ. I mean, at least they slit the throats of the lambs. It was quick. It was a merciful death. Can you imagine them crucifying animals? No. And yet he was many, many times more innocent than those lambs, and yet he was crucified. So you can't compare it, notwithstanding the fact that he had the sins of the world placed on him. No, those criminals, those men to the right and to the left of him, did not have the sins of the world. They were just merely going through an excruciating physical death. I say merely. If that was all he went through, maybe we could compare it. But he had the sins of the world heaped on his head. Not only that, but he was attacked by Satan. He was attacked by the prince of darkness, who was making him doubt everything. And he even questioned whether his father was still with him. He says, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's how terrible it was for him. And so it's that suffering and that death that bought us every blessing. Just try to imagine it hanging over your head your whole life. I mean, we do have it hanging over our head our whole lives, but I was talking to a friend the other day, and it's like we're so good at pushing the reality of death back in the back of our brains, so that we go through life pretty much ignoring the fact that it will happen. In fact, we're in denial. We're thinking that somehow it's not going to happen to me, it's not going to happen to me, and then everybody in their life faces it. But our Lord was aware his entire life that it was going to happen to him. And every day he had to think of it. And every day it was such a foreign concept to him. That's why I say it was much more difficult for him. I tell you this because I want you to appreciate the fact that our salvation comes by his faith in dying the most horrible death on the cross. I've given you this verse before. I'll give it to you again. Romans 3:22, starting with 3:21. Now, apart from law, a righteousness of God is manifest. Yet a righteousness of God through Jesus Christ's faith. I make a big deal of the faith of Christ. You're not saved by your faith. I've told you this before. You're saved by his faith. But what do I mean when I say his faith? It was his faith in going into death. That was the worst nightmare for him. It's worse than our nightmare because, again, he was unacquainted with it. He was an innocent lamb times 1,000. And I want to share this verse with you too. Romans, this is Galatians 2, verse 20. Paul says, I through law died to law that I should be living to God. Then he says this. This is the part I want to emphasize. With Christ have I been crucified, yet I am living, yet no longer I, but living in me is Christ. That which I am now living in flesh, I am living in faith that is of the Son of God. Our faith is of the Son of God. It goes back to the engine analogy. It's of him. He gives it to us. He was the inaugurator. Doesn't Paul say in Hebrews he's the inaugurator and the finisher of our faith? When it says he's the inaugurator, it means that he was the pioneer. He was the one who had the monster faith. He had monster faith. Whatever faith we have is just tiny. It's little. It's just, like I say, it's a dead car hooked up to the train. It's got no life of its own apart from that engine. His faith was monumental. it reverberated throughout the universe. It was the faith that his God would raise him from the dead. And I'm telling you, if you don't believe that Jesus Christ literally died, then you don't even understand what I'm saying. Because to you, if you actually believe that, like the Trinitarians or the modalists, they say Jesus Christ died, but they don't really believe he died. They say that his body died, but he went up to heaven and just like looked at his watch after 3 days, goes back to his body. No, because you rob him of the faith in letting go of his life and literally entering the death state, knowing that unless his Father woke him up from that tomb, he would still be dead today. And as horrifying as you think death is to you, and it is, nobody likes to think of it. We all put it in the back of our heads. But for him, it was something that was hanging over his head his entire life. And it was a horror to contemplate that we can't even imagine. When those Romans slapped him in the face, he was so, I don't know how to put this, he was so non-violent. He was so innocent and not calloused that the slaps that went to his face hurt him 100 times more than any slap to our face. And he was scourged, when he was spit on, when he was mocked. You can try to imagine yourself in that situation, but I guarantee it would be easier for you. It's because you're hardened, you're calloused, you're used to it, you've been abused, you've been hurt, but he had never been acquainted with any of that. And so I just want to leave you with that our faith is great, and I'm glad we have it. He gave it to us, but his faith was beyond our comprehension. And it is his faith that buys every blessing we have. His faith in going to the cross, knowing that his Father, trusting that his God and Father would raise him from the dead. That's what saves us, not our faith. I know I've said that before, but I wanted to give you a new insight that I don't think I've given you before, in that death was thousands of times more horrifying to him than it is to us because of his innocence. And we see that type in the lambs of Israel. If you feel bad for those poor innocent lambs getting their throats slit, then you have to feel absolutely terrified at what Christ went through for us. The good news is that he only had to go through it one time, and he'll never have to go through it again. I even remember that as a kid, I would say, thank God, I'm so glad that Jesus doesn't have to do that again. One time, for all time, for everyone. It's done, it's signed, it's sealed, and it only remains to be delivered. And that's what we're waiting for. We're waiting to see the fruit of what he accomplished at the cross. That fruit will come to us first, and it will come to the rest of the world later. But it is guaranteed for all, by virtue of his faith, not yours.